You are listening to Mining Stock Education, where you'll learn from the top leaders in the natural resource sector and uncover quality mining investment opportunities.
We've got these hedge fund managers, momentum hedge fund traders have come into the market. Big money momentum traders have coming into the market. And since there's no overhead resistance, weakness is quickly bought. I mean, last night overseas, the gold price hit 2372.
You are listening to MSE. I'm your host, Bill Powers. Thanks for tuning in again. And in today's show, you will be hearing from Junior Miner Junkie, David Earthly himself. His website's juniorminerjunkiewithay.com. David, thanks for coming back on the show for our monthly check-in. And it seems like the gold price is actually doing what you've been expecting for years, isn't it?
Better late than never, right, Bill?
Mm-hmm.
But yes, I mean, thanks again for having me on, as always. You know, these monthly chats, I always look forward to them. But yeah, I mean, we were expecting this. Well, I was expecting this cup and handle breakout to happen, a year or two ago. It started to happen a few times. We had some false breakouts, but all this did was build a stronger base, right? And now it appears that the stars have aligned for the gold price here. You know, we've got the conflicts in Ukraine and Palestine continuing, and this political escalation to other countries hangs over the market like a sword of Damocles. And also, you know, you've got the rising U.S. dollar combined with strong U.S. economic data, having expectations of higher for longer interest rates. It's clearly lost its grip on the gold market because, you know, once we had that monthly quarterly close above 2100 the last day of March, and it happened right the day before Easter, so it happened on a Thursday, and you know, kind of the market was kind of sleeping, and once we had that breakout, now there's no more overhead resistance in the gold price. So you know, we've got these hedge fund managers, momentum hedge fund traders have come into the market. Big money momentum traders have coming into the market. And since there's no overhead resistance, weakness is quickly bought. I mean, last night overseas, the gold price hit 2372, which is, you know, really, it's just $135, $40 from the initial 13-year cup and handle breakout of 2500 on gold futures. So that's where the gold price is shooting for now. And I know it's extreme overbought, but overbought can remain overbought for quite some time in bull markets, especially after this powerful breakout of this cup and handle pattern.
There's not many bag holders at this point, is there, in the gold price?
Well, as far as bag holders are concerned, yes, you're a bag holder if you panicked and sold, you know, and got out of this sector. Then if you did that, then you're seeing a lot of these stocks that you panic sold have moved up quite a bit from their lows recently, especially silver stocks recently. Once the silver price got over that stiff resistance at $26, you see, last week we had the gold stocks start to show relative strength to the silver price, because you know, silver and gold stocks have been showing relative weakness to the rising gold price for the past 4 years. But a tell that was about to change was last week when gold stocks decoupled from silver, and then silver started to decouple from the gold price. So now we've got silver, gold stocks showing relative strength to the gold price while it's breaking out. And I think I mentioned this in our last month's chat, or it could have been the month before, that HUI gold ratio that I told everybody that they should watch carefully, because we had a situation where the gold stocks were the cheapest they've ever been to the gold price since early 2016, when gold was bottoming at $1,000, even though the gold prices had doubled. And it was threatening to break out above stiff 13-year resistance at 2,2100. The gold stocks got down to the cheapest level they'd been since 2016, which presented an incredible opportunity. And since then, you've seen that HUI gold ratio pop higher, which means the gold stocks had just begun to catch up to the gold price. So they've got so much more catching up to do. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see a situation where the gold price initially meets that target of 2,500 and starts its healthy correction of those outsized, huge outsized gains in such a small amount of time. But gold stocks continue to go higher since they do have so much catching up to do.
So we might have a near-term resistance point of the $2,500 because of this big move. But do you see maybe the inflation-adjusted all-time price of gold, which would be closer to $3,000, do you see that as the next major resistance point?
That is, after we see, I think we're going to see some sort of consolidation at $2,500, especially if it reaches it here quickly on this move. But yes, the $3,000 level, I think it's a little over $3,000 is a CPI inflation adjusted price. But then again, that's the government's new CPI inflation adjusted price, right? If you go over to John Williams Shadow Stats and you look at the way that they adjusted CPI back in 1980, and basically that's when the silver price hit its all-time high of $48. And if you take the inflation, the government official tally of CPI adjusted inflation, the silver price, the inflation adjusted silver price is about $145.
So, oh wow, we're a ways off from that.
Yeah, so we just reached the halfway point we just reached above the halfway point to where silver's all time high of 50. So the multi-year stiff resistance in silver is at $30, and it just went over 28 in Asia last night, and it's still got so much catching up to do to not only the gold price but to the inflation adjusted gold price.
So do you think silver is being viewed, at least in the last week and a half, as a monetary metal and not an industrial metal? Is that why we're seeing the move?
Ever since the silver price hit double topped at $50 back in 2011, silver's become more of an industrial metal, I think mostly because it's solar applications now. So it's more of an industrial metal than it is a precious metal, but its precious metals component is kicking in now. So once we get that close above $30 on a weekly basis, I believe, you know, you're probably going to see it run to 34, 35 pretty quickly. Cause it's also got a cup and handle pattern, but it's a lot bigger, right? Because the cup is from 1980 to 2011, which is 31 years, and the handle is about 11 years. So once we have that breakout, it should be even more powerful than the cup and handle breakout in gold we're experiencing right now.
Dave, I saw someone say that those of us that expect silver to perform such as you're describing because of its monetary function are missing the point that the younger generation does not view it in a monetary way. They view Bitcoin and Ethercoin and all these things. So they're saying that's going to take away some of your purchasing demand. What do you think about that argument?
I would agree with that to a certain extent, but we have to understand how tiny this sector is. If you take the entire silver mining sector, it's only $15 billion. And then if you take the entire gold, precious metals mining sector, it's only about $380-400 billion, which is around the market cap of Home Depot. So this sector is super tiny, and it's been ignored for so long, and it's still being ignored, despite the fact that the gold price is breaking out of this huge 13-year cup and handle pattern, and it's got no overhead resistance, because they basically, the stock market and Bitcoin have been doing the same things. So we've got a younger generation that goes, oh wow, look at gold breaking out, so what, my Bitcoin is doing so much better, and I've made so much more money in Bitcoin. And as far as in AI stocks, that bubble is yet to burst, although both Bitcoin and AI are starting to show cracks. But you know, once these people finally realize that, hey, gold is real money, and it's been real money throughout the world for the past 5,000 years, and Bitcoin, I'm going to have to exchange my Bitcoin for currency to buy anything, then that's when you're going to see these stocks really take off. And they've just got so much more catching up to do because, I mean, if you take the mining sector, I think generalists are finally catching on that, hey, mining stocks are extremely undervalued in relation to the gold price. So I think they're starting to get into mining stocks a little bit, but they're still nowhere near coming into juniors.
So on that note, there have been some juniors that I've seen come off the bottom. I saw, for example, like Tier 1 silver go from 9 cents to 15 cents, you know, 65% move, and other juniors like that. And then when, let's say you've positioned yourself in some juniors that you have high hopes for at the turn, but they don't respond off the bottom the way you see others responding, and now we're 2 weeks into the move, and there's this tendency to try to sell, well, let me just sell this one, because we're already 2 weeks into the move, and go buy the one that ran up 45%. Any advice here, Dave?
Yeah, I mean, that's a mistake. See, this is my third go around in a major beginning of a major cyclical upleg in gold stocks. I mean, they usually last about 3 years. The first one was when gold double bottomed at 250 back in the early 2000s. From 2001 to 2003, we had the first one, and then we had a consolidation of that move for a couple of years in the mining space. And then from 2005 to 2007, we had the next one. And then we had the great financial crisis, right? Where everyone panicked and sold everything and got into dollars. And that corrected all the precious mining stocks down into late 2008, 2009. So the next upleg was 2009 to 2011. So basically, first biggest lesson I learned when starting to participate in these huge uplegs was I always get in early, and I always get in too early. So I have a lot of positions down that are 30, 40, 50% down, but I just keep averaging down on them because I know that the sector, I'm fairly confident that the sector is creating a major bottom. So I did this again this time, and I've got several stocks that are, you know, down 30, 40%. And the worst thing you could do is, first thing, you've had the incredible patience and the forthrightness and to see ahead and accumulate these things and wait for the bottom. The worst thing you could do is to panic sell something that you're down 30, 40% on, to basically get FOMO in something that's already moved higher and is ready to correct. And then once that takes place, you've basically limited, you know, your capital gains in your junior portfolio while getting FOMO chasing something that's already moved higher. Then what you've chased starts to correct, and the things that haven't moved yet start to move higher. And then it gets you even more upset and frustrated, and you start doing more things that without the proper forethought. So basically, what's happening now is you've got the GDX and the GDXJ, which are major miners and mid tier and royalty companies. These are the stocks that mining sector speculators got into early, and they're starting to take profits in now because they're extreme overbought. And what they're doing is they're rotating those profits into the quality juniors on their watch list that have yet to take off. And you're starting to see that today, and you started to see it last week, where GDX and GDXJ have paused. And I've got several stocks in my portfolio that are up quite a bit today because of that taking place. So you basically have to remember the fact that you know, You had the foresight to do this at the right time, and accumulate these stocks at deeply depressed levels, and just hold on to them. Just, you know, make your decisions based company specific, not FOMO, not based on FOMO to chase something else. Sell it, take the loss, and chase something else.
You've identified these quality juniors that you're mentioning, and your advice has been be tight, sit right. And so now that we see the move off the bottom, Dave, do you kind of average up a little because you expect a more prolonged run, or do you just sit with what you have and you'll just take profits along the way? Or is there any averaging up?
Well, my decisions are company specific, because what's happened with a lot of these companies, you know, a couple of years, they had 3 to 10 times upside potential. But with the long dragged out bear market, while the gold price was going higher, I mean, while the gold price was going sideways, a lot of these juniors were going lower because all-in sustaining costs were going high. We pretty much know the reason why this has taken place. We've talked about this before. So what these companies, some of the companies have done their best to manage these really tight and difficult capital markets to where they didn't have too much dilution in continuing to de-risk their projects. But some of them, they've had to give out long dated warrants, you know, 3 or 4 year warrants, and they've had to over dilute their stock while they're de-risking their projects, and their share counts have become bloated. So what was 3 to 10 times upside before maybe is a double or a triple if you're lucky now because of their bloated share structure. So you basically have to make your decisions on a company by company basis. I've got one company in that situation right now to where I'm still down, you know, 40% on it. I do expect it to at least get back to my cost. So I'm going to just hold on to it. And then once it does, I'll sell it. And then I'll make a decision to do what to rotate the investment capital into something else. So basically the answer is you have to look at these companies, these juniors, on a company by company basis, looking at share structure, looking at how much more they have to de-risk their project. Once they do de-risk their project to the finance stage or the feasibility stage, how much longer is it going to take them to get their permits? Basically figuring out, hey, okay, there's probably going to be even more dilution. And this share structure that's already starting to get bloated, it can get even more bloated. So maybe it's best to just hold on to it if I'm down, you know, 20-30% or whatever, and I think it's going to go up to this resistance area where my accumulated cost average is. Then I'll make the decision to sell it, and then I'll rotate it into something else, because there's still plenty of stocks that haven't moved yet, and there's still plenty of stocks that I don't think will move yet until certain things happen with them. So I've got a watch list of 20 companies for myself and my subscribers that I'm watching really carefully. You know, I've gone through it recently and I've updated it, and I'm watching these companies really closely as to which ones I'm going to get into once I make the decision to sell something that has, you know, that has a bloated share structure and no longer has that huge upside that it had when I first started accumulating it. Then I'll sell it for my cost, and then I'll rotate it into something else.
So you have your speculative account that you're referencing, but you also have your retirement account where you have some of the gold majors. When the gold majors start to become more profitable, Dave, and the cash flow increases on the balance sheet, do you want to see them give that back to you in the form of a dividend or reinvesting growth? What's your personal preference?
That's also a company by company basis decision, I think. I think a lot of these companies need to start focusing on growth now, because most of them have been concentrating on balance sheet health, right? They've been concentrating on balance sheet health, paying dividends, and share buybacks. Well, now it's time to start focusing on growth now that the gold price is breaking out. I mean, just imagine what these companies' profits, Q1 profits, are going to be while the gold price has gone up so much in Q1 here. I think that you're going to start to see M&A really pick up in this sector based on that. And also you're going to start to see a lot of these companies take bigger strategic investments in a lot of these juniors that have these big, huge, multi-million ounce gold projects that are at the finance stage or very close to the finance stage, and they've got blue sky potential. You know, that's what these majors, these mid-tiers want to see.
In the last 2 weeks, have you seen an uptick in subscribers with the gold price moving up?
Yes, I have. It's been nice. Yeah, the last few months I've had quite a few in March and here in April.
So, Mark, you think March, in anticipation of this move, you noticed the uptick? Because that's one of the sentiment indicators we pay attention to, right, between you and me, number of subscribers and gauged interest.
Yes, I mean, it's really picked up since the end of last year. I mean, there was kind of a lull in January, February. I still had subscribers coming on board, but not as many. But there was a lull in January and February when there was a lot of frustration in the sector. But, you know, in March, it really started to pick up, you know, right around PDAC.
So you've been on the sidelines in terms of new exploration companies, but now with the gold price moving, we know this makes a lot of these projects more financeable. Are you going to look at Explorcos again here, Dave?
You know, I've got a few on my watch list, but I'm still concentrating on the companies that have proved up these multi-million ounce deposits and that are close to the finance stage or at the feasibility stage or even pre-feasibility stage, because, you know, there's a lot less risk in these things because they've already found, you know, these multi-million ounce deposits and they're in good jurisdictions. And I just don't see the advantage of taking a risk on early stage companies just yet. You know, I'm like, but again, you know, you have to take it on a company by company basis. There are a couple out there that are starting to look attractive, but I don't think I'm going to start to go into them just yet. I mean, the capital markets are just starting to loosen up now, but they still need to get that window still needs to open up a lot wider before I start to think about getting into early stage exploration companies again.
To learn more about David's service, go head on over to juniorminerjunkiewithy.com. He has a free weekly email list where he'll send you his Friday night commentary on the gold price action in that week. And if you need more guided service, he has a subscription service where you get to look over his shoulder to see where he's investing, when he's buying, when he's selling. And he also gives you the rationale and the investment thesis behind those decisions. So it's an educational opportunity, not just a stock picking service. Dave, as always, appreciate your insights, and I'll reach back out to you to come on the show again in about 30 days.
Looking forward to it. Always great talking to you. Thanks again.
Thank you for listening to Mining Stock Education. Please subscribe and share this show with like-minded investors. Connect with us at miningstockeducation.com and sign up for our email list to stay in touch. Much success to you as you learn about, invest in, and profit from mining stocks.
The mining business is one that generates gigantic wealth. You know, a good drill hole that converts might cost $50,000 or $100,000, and it might discover something worth a couple billion.
There is no sector that I know of that has offered up as many predictable circumstances where there was the possibility, certainly not the certainty, but the possibility of 10-for-1 returns as there is in small cap and micro cap mining stocks. Concomitant with that, if you don't do the work, or even if you do the work and don't discipline yourself on the sell side, there are very few places in the world where you can lose as much money as quickly as in mining stocks too.
I just started to study up on mining stocks, and I just became fascinated because this is such a tiny sector and it's so volatile that either you could do really, really well, or you could pretty much get blown out of the water really quickly.
The mining sector is a very risky sector. It can take your money very, very quickly. Don't fall in love with stocks. Don't be overly confident. And just do your work as best you can. Do your very best. But don't fall in love and don't get too overly confident, because that's a recipe for disaster.
I have met, you know, professional retail investors that have made a tremendous amount of money on the junior mining space. Some of them aren't accredited, and they spend their days researching, talking to people, being on the phone, pouring through financial documents. But it requires commitment.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be considered personal legal or investment advice or a recommendation to buy or sell securities or any other product. We make every effort to be accurate, but the information presented is not to be considered infallible. It may contain errors, and we offer no inferred or explicit warranty. If personal advice is needed, consult a qualified legal, tax, or investment professional. Do not base any investment decision on the information contained on miningstockeducation.com, our podcasts, or videos. Make sure you always conduct your own thorough due diligence before investing. Realize that we may hold equity positions in or be compensated by some of the companies we feature and therefore are biased and hold an obvious conflict of interest. For our full disclaimer, please visit our website.